Hey guys, this is Vyom Joshi with Superior North. Welcome back to my channel. Last week we reviewed ExxonMobil's 10K annual report. We looked at the business model, the risk factors, as well as the contingent liabilities associated with investing in that company. Today we will be reviewing Exxon's key ratios, look at the fundamentals, and focus on the discounted free cash flow DCF analysis to figure out the intrinsic value of the company. We will also be doing an expected rate of return calculation to figure out if we were to invest in Exxon at the current valuations, what kind of return can we expect on that investment? So let's dive in and look at ExxonMobil.
Hey guys, let's start off by looking at the key ratios. I'm on Morningstar for ExxonMobil under key ratios, looking at the financials. The first one that we have on the list is the revenue. The revenue is the top line of the company, and all the numbers here are in millions of dollars. We can see that back in 2010, the revenue was about $372 billion. It increased the next year, and then ever since then, the revenue has been on a decline. For the year ending in 2019, the revenue was $255 billion. The operating income, which is the amount of money generated by Exxon's core business, had a similar trend where we can see that the operating income peaked out in 2011 with $58 billion. And ever since then, it has been on a decline. And as of year end 2019, the number is about $13 billion for operating income. Next is the net income, which is the bottom line of the income statement. This number gives us an idea of how much money is left with the company once it pays for all the costs, the expenses, interests, and taxes. We can see that the net income has been positive every year. The net income peaked out in 2012 when it was about $45 billion. And for the year end 2019, the net income was about $14.3 billion. Next is the dividends. We can see that Exxon has been increasing its dividends for the past decade. This is something that we want to see as investors. We want to invest in companies that is hiking its dividend payout. That way, we can get more money out of the company as shareholders. However, when we look at the payout ratio, which is a comparison of the company's dividend payout to its net income, we can see that that ratio has been abnormally high since 2016. It was 138% in 2016. For the year end 2019, it was 98%. And for the trailing 12 months, it's 446%. Now, if we compare these payout ratios to that of 2010, 2011, 2012, 2013, and even 2014, we can see that the highest it got to was about 33%. So unless Exxon generates greater revenue, which increases the net income, it is going to be very difficult for Exxon to keep paying out these high dividends. Next is the shares outstanding. We can see that back in 2010, Exxon had about 4.897 billion shares outstanding. And for the trailing 12 months, Exxon has 4.270 billion shares outstanding. So over a 10-year period, we can see that Exxon's shares outstanding have decreased. This is good news for existing shareholders because as the company buys back its shares, it increases the existing shareholders' ownership within the company. Next is the book value per share. The way Morningstar calculates its book value is it simply subtracts the total liabilities of a company from its total assets. We can see that back in 2010, Exxon's book value was about $29.5 per share. And for the trailing 12 months, it's about $41.96 per share. So over the past 10 years, the book value per share has increased. However, we have to take this $41.96 per share of book value with a grain of salt because as we saw last week when we were reviewing the risk factors, Exxon mentioned that when it goes to divest its assets, it is going to be hard for Exxon to sell that asset at the price it wants to sell it at. So for example, Exxon may want to divest its assets such as refinery at $1,000. However, it may end up selling that refinery at $600. Even though the book value was $1,000, it actually sold for $600. So we have to take this $41.96 per share with a grain of salt and not just rely on the book value per share while making our investment decision. After that, looking at the free cash flow. Free cash flow is what we get when we subtract capital spending from the operating cash flow. We can see that Exxon's free cash flow has been positive from 2010 all the way through 2019. However, for the trailing 12 months, Exxon's free cash flow is negative. This is primarily because of the decline in the operating cash flow, which is a result of the decline in the company's revenue. I will be using the past 10 years of free cash flows for my expected rate of return calculation, and I'll be using the 2019 figure of $5,355 million of free cash flow for my discounted free cash flow DCF analysis. Next, let's look at the profitability of the company. Let's focus on the net margin. Net margin is the ratio of the company's bottom line, which is the net income, divided by the top line, which is its revenue. Exxon's net margin for the year ending in 2019 was 5.61%. This means that every $100 that Exxon makes from its sales, by the time it pays for all the expenses, the interest, the taxes, it has about $5.61 left. Next, looking at the return on equity. The return on equity is the ratio of the company's net income to its shareholders' equity. Warren Buffett wants this number to be at least 8% or higher for the past 10 years. We can see that Exxon's return on equity was as high as about 30% in 2012 to as low as 4.64% in 2016. Although Exxon's return on equity has not been greater than 8% consistently for the past 10 years, if we average the past 10 years of return on equity out, we get about 16% return. Next is the return on invested capital. This number gives us an idea of how good the management is at investing the capital and getting a return on that investment. As we can see, the return on invested capital goes hand in hand with the return on equity. For the year ending in 2019, the return on invested capital was about 6.36%. And finally, looking at the interest coverage. Interest coverage is the ratio of the company's net income to its interest obligations. Benjamin Graham, the father of value investing, preferred that we only invest in companies that have interest coverage of 5 times or greater. We can see that for the year ending in 2019, Exxon's interest coverage was about 25 times. This means that given Exxon's income in 2019, it can pay off its interest 25 times for that calendar year. Now let's focus on the financial health of the company. Looking at the liquidity measures, the first one we have on the list is the current ratio. The current ratio compares the company's current assets to its current liabilities. We want this number to be at least a 1.0 or higher. As we can see, Exxon's current ratio has always been less than 1 except in 2012 when it was 1.0. So if we compare this number to that of Chevron, we can see that from a liquidity standpoint, Chevron is in a much better shape than Exxon is. For the latest quarter, Exxon's current ratio is 0.86. This means that it does not have enough assets to cover its current obligations. If Exxon had $100 coming due in the next 12 months, it only has $86 for that $100 liability. In other words, it has a 0.86 current ratio. Next is the financial leverage. We can see that back in 2010, Exxon's financial leverage was a 2.06, and for the latest quarter, it's about 2.02. For the most part, Exxon's financial leverage has hovered between a high of 2.06 in 2010 to a low of 1.8 in 2018. Exxon is a little bit more financially leveraged than Chevron. Chevron's latest quarter financial leverage was about 1.69. And as we can see, Exxon's latest quarter financial leverage is 2.02. So it is not that Exxon is incredibly more leveraged than Chevron is. However, both the companies are in the ballpark. But when we compare Chevron to Exxon, Exxon is more financially leveraged. And finally, looking at the debt to equity ratio, this number gives us an idea of the company's total debt to its shareholders' equity. We want this number to be less than 1, even better if it's less than 0.5. And from that standpoint, Exxon's debt to equity ratio has been outstanding. Back in 2010, it was about 0.08. It has been increasing over the years. And for the latest quarter, the debt to equity ratio is at 0.26. Now let's look at the efficiency ratios. The first one on the list is the day sales outstanding. The day sales outstanding gives us an idea of how many days does it take for the company to receive cash after it records its revenue on its books. For the past 10 years, the day sales outstanding have been fairly consistent, and that is certainly something we want to see. Next is the day's inventory. This number gives us an idea of how many days does Exxon's products sit in the inventory before they get sold. Back in 2010, Exxon's product sat in the inventory for 17 days, and for 2019, it sat in the inventory for about 34 days. So we can see that Exxon's products is spending more time in its inventory. This is not a trend that we want to see. We want to see the day's inventory number to be steady or declining, and the day's inventory number goes hand in hand with the inventory turnover. The inventory turnover tells us how many times does Exxon's inventory go through its system in a given calendar year. We can see that back in 2010, Exxon's inventory went through 21.39 times. And for the year ending in 2019, it only went through 10 times. So now we can make the correlation of how, since Exxon's inventory turnover has dropped off, its sales volumes, its revenue has dropped off as well. Now let's look at Exxon's current valuations. Over here, we will be comparing ExxonMobil to the S&P 500. S&P 500 is the aggregate of the top 500 companies in the United States. The first ratio we have is the price to earnings ratio. We can see that ExxonMobil's PE ratio is 42 as compared to the S&P 500, which is about 25.3. The price to book ratio, ExxonMobil is at 0.8 and S&P 500 is at 3.4. The price to sales ratio, ExxonMobil is at 0.7 and S&P 500 is at 2.4. The price to cash flow, ExxonMobil is at 8.2, whereas S&P 500 is at 14.5. And finally, the dividend yield. ExxonMobil has a dividend yield of 10.6% as compared to S&P 500, whose dividend yield is 2%. We can see that ExxonMobil's PE ratio is a lot greater than that of S&P 500. This is primarily because ExxonMobil's earnings have dropped off, which has inflated its price to earnings ratio. However, when we look at the other four metrics, we can see that ExxonMobil is clearly undervalued compared to S&P 500. Hey guys, let's look at the discounted free cash flow DCF analysis for ExxonMobil. Over here, I have entered the current year's free cash flow number of $5,355 million. I'm expecting the annual growth rate of free cash flow for the next 10 years to be 5%. I'm using a discount rate of 10%. I'm using the long-term growth rate of 5%. So what this means is for my long-term, which is after my 10-year mark into perpetuity, I'm expecting that growth to be 5% as well. For my shares outstanding, it is 4,270 million shares. And the long-term debt is $24,672 million. I got this number from ExxonMobil's balance sheet. And after taking all of these into account, I'm getting the intrinsic value of Exxon to be about $19.81 per share. If we compare this to the current stock price of $32.80 per share, we can see that we would be paying a premium of 1.65 times if we were to purchase Exxon at the current valuation of $32.80 per share. The way this intrinsic value of $19.81 per share is derived is by looking at what the free cash flow would be for the first 10 years. So for my first year, second year, third year, fourth year, all the way up to 10 years into the future, we look at all those free cash flows. We discount those free cash flows back to the present value and get $41,832 million. Then we add what the free cash flows would be from the 10-year mark into perpetuity. We sum those two free cash flows up and get the intrinsic value of $109,244 million. We subtract the long-term debt from this number and we divide by the shares outstanding to get the intrinsic value of $19.81 per share. Hey guys, now let's look at the expected rate of return calculation for ExxonMobil. Over here, I pasted the past 10 years of free cash flows that I got from Morningstar. When we plot these numbers up, we can clearly see the cyclicality in the business and the free cash flows that Exxon has on hand every year. Next, looking at the future data and predictions, I'm assuming that there's a 25% likelihood that Exxon's free cash flow would grow at 15%. There's a 50% likelihood that the free cash flow would grow at 5%, a 25% likelihood that the free cash flow would actually decline at 2%. These are the potential free cash flow raise that we get into the future. And after taking into account the numbers of shares outstanding, which is 4,270 million shares, and the current stock price of $32.80 per share, we get an expected rate of return of about 5%. This means that if you were to purchase ExxonMobil's share at $32.80 per share, we can expect to get a return of about 5% on that investment. Hey guys, now let's wrap it all up. Today we looked at Exxon's fundamentals. We saw that the revenue as well as earnings for the past few years have been declining, especially for the trailing 12 months. The earnings have evaporated primarily because of the travel restrictions put in place due to the pandemic. We noticed that ExxonMobil has been increasing its dividends every year for the past 10 years. However, its dividend payout is not feasible in the long run because its payouts are greater than its income. After that, we looked at the return on equity and the return on invested capital, both of which have fluctuated over the years. Next, we looked at the interest coverage, which has been greater than a 5 for the past 10 years, which is something we want to see. When we looked at the liquidity measures, we saw that ExxonMobil's current ratio was less than a 1, which is not something we want to see in a company. However, when we looked at ExxonMobil's debt-to-equity ratio, we saw that it was less than a 0.5, which tells us that ExxonMobil, even though it's taking on more debt, it is still capable of paying off those obligations. After that, we saw that Exxon's inventory turnover ratio had been declining for the past 10 years, which tells us that less inventory has been going through Exxon's system every year for the past 10 years. Next, when we compared ExxonMobil to the S&P 500, we saw that on all the valuation metrics other than the PE ratio, ExxonMobil was undervalued to the S&P 500. When we performed the discounted free cash flow DCF analysis, we saw that ExxonMobil's intrinsic value came out to about $20 per share. Then when we did the expected rate of return calculation, we saw that if we were to invest in ExxonMobil at the current valuation of $32.8 per share, we would expect to get a return of about 5% on that investment. So if we take into account ExxonMobil's annual report and the discussions that we did last week, and this week when we looked at Exxon's fundamentals, we can clearly see that Chevron is far superior investment than ExxonMobil. We reviewed Chevron a couple months ago, and we can see that Chevron provides a greater margin of safety, it provides a greater return on investment, and even fundamentally, it's a far superior company than ExxonMobil. Hey guys, that is all I have for you this week. Hopefully you found this video interesting. Please do like, share, comment, and subscribe to my channel. Thank you.